From KLW News in San Francisco, this is Cross Currents, context, culture, and connection from around the Bay Area.
Pittsburgh.
P-World.
Oakland.
Corona Heights, San Francisco.
Coming up, we're headed to Richmond to hear about Chevron's controversial plan to modernize its oil refinery.
And here we are talking today about zero net increase in greenhouse gas and associated toxins. You can't beat that. You should be trying to jump out of an airplane to support a project like that.
Then we'll dig deeper into the backstory of the refinery with reporter Robert Rogers.
Chevron's philanthropy in Richmond has increased more than sevenfold in the last few years. The money has moved the needle in Richmond.
And we'll go to a Richmond laundromat that doubles as a library.
Wherever families are, there'll be books there.
Lessons from Richmond coming up today on Cross Currents. Oil giant Chevron and its neighbors in Richmond have been fighting for nearly a decade over a proposal to retool the oil company's refinery. Most everyone agrees the plant needs to be modernized. What they don't agree on is how to do it. Chevron says the $1 billion project would make the refinery cleaner and safer. Environmentalists say the upgrade does too little to lower toxic emissions in a city plagued by high asthma rates. But some residents argue that Richmond, one of the Bay Area's poorest communities, needs the jobs that the project would bring. KALW's Ronnie Cohen brings us a snapshot of last week's contentious city council meeting about the refinery's future.
More than 400 people have filled Richmond's Civic Auditorium. You can spot the Chevron workers. They're wearing blue and white shirts saying Richmond Proud and waving signs that read Modernize Now. Signs supplied by Chevron.
Good evening, Madam Mayor.
Folks like Donald Smith talk about their loyalty to Chevron. He says the oil company gave him a job in the Richmond plant when he was released from prison in 1995. And his work was to help reduce air pollutants.
During this improvement, not only did Chevron produce cleaner, safer gas, but I too was improved with a livable wage, benefits, a sense of self-worth.
About 2,700 employees and 850 contractors work in Richmond's sprawling Chevron plant. The refinery is the largest taxpayer in the city with just over 100,000 residents. Smith says the energy company has taken care of Richmond's residents, and the city should greenlight the remodel.
And lastly, I'd like to say, for all the people against this project, I don't remember seeing one bicycle parked out front.
I rode my bicycle here tonight.
That's Planning Commissioner Marilyn Langlois. The city council's lawyer has recommended that the council approve a more environmentally friendly project than the one Chevron initially proposed. But it would be a less green project than the Planning Commission wants. Langlois urges the council to follow the commission's recommendations. To have Chevron replace all its aging pipes, to permanently fix all its leaks, and to dome all its tanks.
Imagine a city council that isn't deterred by threats of lawsuits and requires Chevron to undertake reasonable safety and emissions reductions measures as part of this major construction project.
The city actually approved Chevron's modernization plan in 2008, but environmentalists sued and a judge stopped construction. The court found the city had failed to consider potential air pollution from new supplies of heavier crude. And the city should have required lower greenhouse gas emissions. Right now, the city's trying to figure out how low. But many at the hearing worry more about jobs than pollution. Unemployment in Richmond is nearly 10%, far above the Bay Area's jobless rate. Antoine Cloyd, who's worked at the plant, says the council should focus on what steady employment means for people like him.
If you approve this project, the kids will now get PlayStations and Barbie dolls and bears that talk to them. See, it's a difference when a man can go home and be a man with a job.
But Mia Yoshintani sees it differently. She's with the Asian Pacific Environmental Network and says Richmond can have jobs and clean air if it adopts the Planning Commission's stricter recommendations.
Take the opportunity that's in front of you, the opportunity to begin to invest in the transition from fossil fuels to clean, renewable energy that is inevitable and that only makes the Richmond economy more robust, more diverse, and more powerful.
West County Toxics Coalition Director Henry Clark has spent decades fighting for environmental justice in Richmond. And while many of those battles have been against Chevron, he now embraces the oil company's modernization plan.
This project here is the best refinery project that have ever come before people here in the city of Richmond. Period. And here we are talking today about zero net increase in greenhouse gas and associated toxins. You can't beat that. You should be trying to jump out of an airplane to support a project like that.
But not everyone wants to take the leap. They know Chevron is far and away the largest employer in Richmond, and they want to make sure all those workers and all of Richmond's residents are safe. After 5 hours of discussion, it's past 11:30 p.m., and 88 of the people who signed up to speak are still waiting for their turn. In Richmond, I'm Ronnie Cohen for Cross Currents.
KLW's Sandhya Dirks contributed to that story. Richmond City Council is holding a second meeting for public comment tomorrow night. You'll find links to more information at klw.org. Just click on Cross Currents. Reporter Robert Rogers has been covering Richmond for years, first for the blog Richmond Confidential and now for the Contra Costa Times. That means he understands a lot of the backstory behind the hearings taking place right now. KLW's Ben Trefney got in touch with Rogers at his office and asked him where Chevron gets its oil from and how that plays into the plan to modernize its Richmond refinery.
The oil that the Chevron refinery receives, and it is different in some respects than other Contra Costa area refineries, comes exclusively from two places, the Middle East and Alaska. And it typically gets there via large tanker ships. Over time, from both sources, the oil that is being harvested from these places winds up with higher sulfur content. And so Chevron is thinking not just about today, but far down the future, and the value of being able to handle oil that is more sour, to use petroleum industry speak, and to refine it in a way that's more energy and, most of all, financially efficient.
So city staff in Richmond is recommending that Chevron pay to hire monitors for this upgraded plant plan. Who would choose that monitor? Would it be the city? Would it be Chevron or some combination in there?
The monitors are a new inclusion as this process has gone on. And it's another concession that Chevron has agreed to in order, in its mind, I'm sure, to speed the process along. The city would manage the role of the monitors. The city would select the monitors. Chevron's only role is to pay their salary.
And the Planning Commission in Richmond has made recommendations that are fairly strict along environmental lines and how much Chevron would have to pay out. So is Chevron convinced that those recommendations would hinder the plant that they want to make? Does that have to do with cost? And what would be the consequences there if, say, the Planning Commission's recommendations go forth?
This is one of those situations where the intent and the gravity and the importance of something is much more demonstrated by what is done than by what is said. Chevron says very little about the Planning Commission's recommendations other than they have grave concern and they are appealing. What they're doing is going through the process of mobilizing their supporters, which includes workers and hundreds, maybe thousands of people around the city and organizations who benefit from Chevron's philanthropy. And they've mobilized them all with a very concerted campaign to bear pressure on the city to reject the Planning Commission's recommendations. Chevron will say, when pressed, that the recommendations limit their flexibility and require them to make concessions, especially in terms of some of their emissions, that will reduce their competitiveness. That's their kind of vanilla way of saying that this is very important and it's going to cost them a lot of money, and that's why they won't so easily accede to it.
That's Robert Rogers. He's a reporter for the Contra Costa Times. How much philanthropy is Chevron involved with in the city of Richmond? I mean, it's really a company town. In fact, the city of Richmond came after the Chevron refinery was there in the first place, the original Chevron refinery.
The question of Chevron's philanthropy in Richmond is a fascinating and illustrative one. What we see in very hard numbers is as recently as the early 2000s into the mid-2000s, Chevron annually plodded along, giving around $1 million or less to the city of Richmond, to its various pet projects, some of the businesses that it procured from, maybe some nonprofits and some charities. That was always the way it was until the latter part of the 2000s, when Chevron came under increasingly concerted criticism and opposition from a progressive grassroots movement in the city. And in response, Chevron upped its giving, probably in the theory that the more money you give, the more friends you have. Now Richmond is up, Chevron is up to $6 and $7 million a year in direct subsidies, philanthropy, charitable giving. This doesn't even go into the millions of dollars that Chevron has sponsored into the West Contra Costa School District, the events. Chevron's philanthropy in Richmond has increased more than sevenfold in the last few years. And a lot of people, myself included, believe that that's at least in part in response to the concerted opposition that Chevron faced in Richmond that it never faced before.
So when political issues come to a head, like they are right now in Richmond with this modernization proposal, how has that philanthropy affected the general feelings about Chevron? Has it had the intended effect that you think they might have been going for?
I think Chevron would argue, and I would too, that the money has made a difference. The money has moved the needle in Richmond. While Chevron is always open and ready to provide the numbers that they give annually in philanthropy, they are staunchly secretive about what they provide in their public relations campaign. And those numbers are undoubtedly large. What has happened in the last year has been quite astonishing and has gained a lot of interest from media, both regionally and even nationally. Chevron, kind of taking a page out of the book of perhaps a U.S. Steel or a Standard Oil over 100 years ago, has funded a series of community websites, including with titles like Richmond Standard and Richmond Proud, and especially Richmond Standard. This is a site, a news site that was launched and is under the direction of a former San Francisco Examiner editor, and it provides community news. And it does so oftentimes ostensibly, objectively, focusing on crime and community events. But it also has taken the opportunity on many occasions to report various scandals embroiling the politicians that Chevron doesn't like. And it also, of course, takes every chance it can to tout Chevron's philanthropy and other good works in the community. Exactly what level of editorial control Chevron exerts is unknown, but one could presume it's quite a bit. There are no stories that are remotely critical of Chevron on its news websites.
I thought that it was interesting that they called it the Richmond Standard just because the name Standard has such ties to the oil industry.
Indeed, a play on that. They've also initiated a campaign called Richmond Proud, which very deftly plays on the city's working class and World War II industrial history and links that seamlessly with Chevron's own destiny. It doesn't hurt that they have an unlimited checkbook to do things like canvas the entire city in billboard space that features these very appealing Chevron ads.
Contra Costa Times reporter Robert Rogers spoke with KALW's Ben Trefney. You're listening to Cross Currents from KLW News. I'm Holly Kernan. We'll stay in Richmond for our next story about an unusual pairing, laundromats and literature. Richmond has a lot of places to wash your clothes. Teddy Bear Wash and Dry, Oasis Laundry, Maxwell the Cleaner, Launderland, Fluffy Bear Coin Laundry. Let's just say there's probably a laundromat within walking distance of most homes. But when it comes to literature, there's more of a gap. Only 30% of third graders in Richmond can read at grade level, and Richmond Public School students scored among the lowest in state standardized testing last year across all tested subjects. So what does reading have to do with laundry? KLW's Holly J. McDeed tells us in this story about one woman who saw a very clear connection between the two.
The Clean Express laundromat is smack in the middle of Richmond's busy McDonald's shopping center. Moms are loading and unloading machines. So you might imagine their kids are sitting in plastic chairs watching television. But they're not. They're reading.
Bookstore cat. This is Mulligan. Mulligan is a working cat. He works in a bookstore.
Khalil Montero and his mom, Tana, are reading Space Rock.
Mulligan is also great at picking out books and entertaining customers.
Montero is a working mom, an organizer for the Richmond College Prep School. Of course she wants her son to read, but she finds actually getting him to Richmond's main library to be practically impossible. It's only open 5 days a week. It closes its doors most days at 5 in the afternoon. What Montero does have time for, though, is doing laundry. She has to. So there she was at the Clean Express laundromat one day. She saw how bored her son was, and that's when something clicked. Why not bring the library to the laundromat? First, she needed some books. So she enlisted help from the Richmond Community Foundation and West County Reads. And then it was time to go to the owner of the laundromat with her vision.
She was really excited. She said that one way she tries to keep the kids happy or not crying or just bored is giving them candy. And so she thought having books would be better than candy.
To raise money for the bookshelves, Montero helped plan a literacy festival, the first of its kind in Richmond. Last year, the project collected 1,000 donated books. Montero says it was a huge success.
My son was at the announcement of that, and I had said that we would be giving out 2 or 3 books per kid, and they asked if there were any questions, and he raised his hand and said, "Did you say 2 or 3 books?" And so he was very excited that it would be more than one book.
That wasn't all. West County Reads placed donation boxes throughout Richmond to ensure that there would be plenty of books to put on the bookshelves. One donation box is located at the Starbucks at Point Richmond. I went there with West County Reads chairman, Kevin Hufford.
I'm actually taking books out of our collection box here at the Point Richmond Starbucks, and it's quite a haul. It's not only filled to the rim, and it's a tall, wonderful box, but it's also got 2 boxes next to it.
The program is so successful that Starbucks had to start adding its own cardboard boxes to collect books.
You know, some of these books I've never seen in my life. Here's a deluxe gift set about the Cupcake Crusader, Horace Splatley.
The program is called Take One, Leave One, but children often don't leave books behind because they rarely have one to leave.
Well, I'll tell you, in low-income communities like Richmond, it's unfortunate that there's far too few books in children's homes. I think it's the joy and the excitement on the children's faces that, one, lets me know that it's important, and the fact that it's such an important thing for them and so joyful means that it's probably far too rare that they get an opportunity to do that.
The unemployment rate in the city of Richmond is 5% higher than the average in the rest of California. And last year, according to one measure, Richmond ranked as the 6th most violent city in America. These factors can make it hard for kids in Richmond to focus on reading books. especially when these books are hard to get their hands on.
It's just far too rare to see children's books around in the neighborhood. And that's our idea, is just to make sure that wherever families are, there'll be books there. We all need to make sure that children can read by the time they're in third grade, because really from then on, if they can't do that, they're really struggling.
The thing is, they all are doing something about it. The whole community. Last year, Bliss County Reads received 10,000 donated books. The program is expanding. It's in churches and theater spaces, as well as in laundromats. And more bookshelves will be set up around Richmond's neighboring city, San Pablo. Each week, hundreds of books are donated, and the bookshelves are restacked with books. And each week, the bookshelves are emptied yet again. Because of something Tana Montero knew all along. Kids love to read.
He kept an eye on it all morning. Soon the bookstore was very busy.
Richmond still has a depressed economy. The state and city are making more budget cuts. The libraries here aren't likely to get more staffing or hours anytime soon. But in the corner of a laundromat, a mother and her child are reading together, one book at a time. In Richmond, I'm Holly McDeed for Cross Currents.
Came the pigeon, no one noticed, no one except Mulligan. This is no bird in the store. Meow, Mulligan.
West County Reads can always use more places to put donated books. Find out how you can use your business or home to store books at klw.org. Just click on Cross Currents.
The pigeon landed right to a funny-looking green bird. Oh, no, Mulligan thought. Now there are two birds in the bookstore.
You're listening to Cross Currents from KALW News. I'm Holly Kernan. And now let's stick with books for The Book Report, our new series where we talk with local authors about the books they love. Here we go.
My name is Anise Gross, and my book report is on the abortion. The book centers around an abortion, which is a very unlikely premise for a romantic novel. It's also a book about the spirit of writing. I mean, so many people write books that never get published, and yet the spirit of their work has to have a place. The library that exists in this book only houses manuscripts by unpublished writers who make one copy and they shelve it themselves. And actually, in Burlington, Vermont, some people recreated the library from this book, and it's filled with just unpublished manuscripts by total amateur writers. I think that everybody has a piece of writing where they love it so much that if they gave it to someone they were in love with and that person didn't like the book, they would almost fall out of love with them. And for me, this is that kind of book. If I gave this book to someone I loved and they didn't understand it, I don't know if I could love them as much as I did. It's really a book for dreamers, like for the everyday person who wants to be great but doesn't really know how. I can't think of a book that embodies the spirit of San Francisco more than this book. When I read it, I'm taken back instantly to a place of feeling connected to like who I really am. You can't really ask for much more from a book than that.
The Book Report was produced by KALW's Nina Gensler-Debs and the Litography Project, which is mapping the stories of San Francisco's literary scene. You'll find more stories at thelitographyproject.com. And that that's it for today's Cross Currents from KALW News. Our team includes Jenny Butler, Lawrence Chan, Jeannie Duan, Leela Day, Chris Hoff, Ashley Ann Krigbaum, Ted Muldoon, Liza Veal, and Stephen Short. And we had a guest appearance today from RTM's Kuna Hoff. Today's show was engineered by Seth Samuel. Our line producer was Audrey Dilling. Our senior producers are Julie Kane and Jen Chien. Ben Trefney is our executive editor. Our theme music is by the John Santos Quintet. And thanks to you, I'm so happy to report KALW is listener-supported local public radio. Tune into Cross Currents tomorrow at 5. We'll explore a surprising disagreement over the Islamic holy month of Ramadan.
You're encouraged to be a digital Muslim, and you're encouraged to be an analog Muslim. Whatever gets you good.
Calculating Ramadan, that's tomorrow at 5 on Cross Currents. The music you're hearing is by San Francisco's Drop Tones. You can hear the West Coast soul of the Drop Tones on Friday when they'll be at the Sweetwater Music Hall in Mill Valley. Doors open at about 8 p.m. All of that information, along with more local music and more local stories, is at KALW.org. For Cross Currents, I'm Holly Kernan. Does that belong to her too?